Ailish Warfara, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. God, our next guest just blowing us up all morning. He's dealing with the snowstorm. He's dealing with all the things. Justin Bourne, live from what? You're holding your two kids in your lap. One of them's peeing on you, like on Ivanka Osmak on the Tim and Friends. Like, what's your deal? Like, you're dealing with something. What's going on?
Yeah, you know, we thought we had light at the end of the tunnel. Kid going back to school, denied. Also, daycare closed. Also, you know, a couple of feet of snow. Virtual school starts in 15 minutes. Good times, buddy.
Nope. Sorry,
That's
buddy.
That's great. Yeah. That sounds great. Okay, so let's just get into it. We talked about this in our 7 o'clock hour, just about this is a weird feeling right now in Leafs land, where you go, okay, they took 5 of 6 against 3 of the teams, the best teams in the NHL, on the Western Conference. They go on the road. They get 5 of 6. That's great. That's really great. But it doesn't feel as great as it should. Where are you just at with the roller coaster that was that West Coast road trip?
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question, a great place to start, because it doesn't feel quite right, right? Like, the results were pretty darn good, as you mentioned. The points were there. You know, you beat St. Louis, which is a very good hockey team, and something about it just felt off. And I think part of that is just, you know, how we had set the bar for what the season expectations were. And it was, can the team be more mentally tough? Can they dig in? And
oh, my goodness. All right, can you hear me?
You know, can they dig
so.
In
yeah, got it.
When things get hard, and you know, we saw them a couple times blow leads along the way, and so it feels like as much as they got the points, they didn't answer the questions we wanted answered about being able to handle good teams and pressure moments.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Where you go, hey, this is a very good road trip from a point standpoint, and regular season points matter, right? You got to have them. You're trying to finish up the track, this NHL playoff format, standings thing, whatever the hell. I don't know how much longer we need to keep enduring this before the NHL just decides, hey, maybe we got this wrong. Maybe we should just switch up our stupid playoff format. But yeah, like, again, we're here where the Leafs are high up the track and winning in, you know, playoff in points. And yet still you look at who they could be facing. It's been pointed out there's actually a roadmap for the Leafs right now to be on the road basically like the entire playoffs. It's just so dumb. So incredibly dumb. I know. It's just the league won't take the L. This is just, you know, we talk about this a lot. There's one thing about being wrong about something, but it's so much worse being stubborn. Like, good example of this. Like, I have one guy that's just, like, constantly, writing me right now about Josh Allen, how I felt about him in the draft versus now. It's like, what do you want? A person to stick with the same take their whole lives or what? Like, it's just so stupid. It's just, like, the dumbest thing ever. So just move it off, NHL. Make a change. But we started
look at Bettman and Phoenix. They don't do that. They don't. Yeah, as bad as it can be, once they've dug in, they're going nowhere.
Right. So how about this? The Stars are looking great. The blue line looks pretty shaky. The team defense looks shaky. Which one of those things is more important to you at this point in the season?
Man, I'm real worried about the decor, I'll be honest. Like, the Muzzin thing, I don't feel any better about. You know, Hull, obviously no reason to feel better than we felt earlier in the season. And, you know, I don't know about your group text going on, but, like, Dermott's not looking very good. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, Liljegren scored a goal, and my Twitter feed is like, holy Timothy Liljegren. I was like, you guys seeing the other end of the ice? Like, the problems we thought we might have with this guy are still there, too. So, I went from being like, I think they need a guy to, like, I think they might need two guys on the back end.
Okay, so we agree, but, like, what can they actually do? This is the thing that's stressful. It's like, we have noticed, we circled the issue, we've highlighted, underlined it, it's in bold, and now we know, but is there actually anything that can be done, or is this just, like, going to be the narrative for the rest of the season, and it's going to be like, Jack Campbell's going to have to stand on his head or else?
Mm-hmm. Well, can you, can you fix guys who have been good? You know, are you more likely to trade for a guy who's never been here and have him fit in capably, or, I don't know, figure out what's going on with Jake Muzzin? Does he need more rest? I've been quietly campaigning to load manage him like he's a superstar. Can Justin Hall find a way? What's going on there? He looks, I don't know, is it conditioning or what? He just doesn't look like he's got that same pep in his step this season. So I don't know what it is. Maybe it is some sort of things where, you know, it's a pandemic. It's been difficult. We've all had our challenges. Are these guys in the right place mentally, physically? Because we know they're good hockey players. They're just not playing good hockey. So I think you address with, can we fix these guys before we, you know, import solutions from somewhere else?
Yeah, this is where I'm at with it too, is this, the blue line thing is, I know the Stars can be the Stars, and this is actually almost a testament to the Leafs, where you say, you know, if Matthews, Marner, Tavares, Nylander are all playing the way that they've been playing over this stretch, like if Marner is what he was in that first game back, if Matthews is scoring 10 games in a row, if Tavares is dominating and just being a real presence, if Nylander's having a career season, then you can beat anybody on a given night. Like, that is a real thing. But what happens if you regress from that even just a little bit, right? Well, I don't know if the scoring of that group is more sustainable than the giving up shots, which we've seen over the course of the entire season. Like, we've talked about this. This defensive issue has been a problem all season. And the later we get into the year, I don't think that Sandin or Lilligren are going to progress in a meaningful way that is going to outperform what we could end up seeing, where a guy like Muzzin wears down a little bit, or God forbid, Riley and Brody, with the workload that the two of them have, wear down just even a little touch. The problem is that, yeah, it's like you go, oh, well, you'd like to change two pieces on the blue line. You don't have any flexibility. There aren't a lot of defensemen out there that are 6'7D that are better than Lilligren and Dermott, and you're just sort of trapped. And that's why I'm going to bring you to this. And I know this is very, this is fantasy camp, okay? This isn't going to happen. But why wouldn't you at least consider, why wouldn't you at least consider trying to quietly look around the league and see what you could get for Jake Muzzin? And just say, okay, he's making big money. It's not going to get any easier. He's probably going to have to be moved at some point in this contract if you're going to make the pieces work and you're going to make the dominoes work. Why not shop him around and hope that there is a team out there that still says, nope, you know what? Your team sucks at team defense. We're going to try to acquire this player. And then you end up making some type of a flip, some type of a move to try to supplement what you think you were getting with him. And you try to get him off the books early.
You know, I think it's assessing what, you know, how bad is bad Jake Muzzin? You know, like, do you think he's, you know, I don't know, below league average? Like, I don't think even bad Jake Muzzin is that. We know how excellent he can be when he's at his best. So, you know, you were talking about a team that's pressed up against the salary cap, and if you move Jake Muzzin, then you got to get someone back who is better than Jake Muzzin, and his salary cap hit is not that much of a problem, right? I mean, compared to, you know, sort of second pair guys.
It's about to be a problem.
Yeah. It is. It is for sure. It's just, I don't know that it'd even be possible. I'm with you that, like, there's no one on this team that you should look out that's not named Austin Matthews and say, I'm not trading that player. Like, he's the only guy to me I would say I would not trade that player. So open to hearing ideas. I just don't know that there is a fit out there that's going to be better for Jake Muzzin at around the same price or less.
No, it's why I say it's fantasy camp stuff. I'm trying to spitball ideas here because I don't see a scenario where you move Travis Dermott or Justin Hall and you bring in something of consequence, right? Like, oh, wow, you've moved $1 million off the books and now you're bringing in what exactly? Like, even if you're using first round pick capital, there's really not that kind of a defenseman out there that is all of a sudden going to reshape your blue line, right? That is, you're going to put next to Jake Muzzin and have you feel a whole world better. It's just, it's a really, it reminds me of what we talked about all 2019 born, where you say, the pieces in themselves, they're not all that bad, especially on their salaries, but there's just a fit issue yet again with the blue line. And the worst part about it is, a season ago you thought it was corrected, you know? Like, you had this tease a year ago where you thought, well, this is the meaningful step that this team has taken. They're more mature, they're going to be better at protecting leads, they play better team defense, and the blue line has taken a shape that we can all agree is a good one.
Yeah, and, you know, I'd say this all fell apart, you know, which just sounds terrible, but because Justin Hall has not been very good. You know, if he's good, then you feel better about your second pair. TJ Brody was like the perfect solution, the perfect way to spend that money. He's been amazing for them. And but you're right, that even looking back when you said the pieces don't fit, they thought they had it fixed the next season when they got Zach Bogosian, who was, all right, he's toughness, he's snarl, third pair, cheap. You know, looking at the third pair now, I don't feel as good about it as I felt about it last year. You know, and what's so very, I guess, embodies the Toronto Maple Leaf situation to me is there was a debate about could Lilligren be a NHL defenseman. And we never really stopped to ask, is he the right one for the Leafs? Mm. You know, because, like, I think he proved, hey, he's an NHL defenseman, but I think definitively he's not the right one for the Leafs. So Hall falling off didn't help, but also the third pair losing Bogosian and having Liljegren be like, hey, we proved you wrong, he's a defenseman. It's like, yeah, but he's not the one you need still.
Dude, again, something that I've referenced and that I've talked about with people, Liljegren is one of those Leafs players where people made up their mind about him before he played, right? There are some people mm-hmm. where they said, this guy's a stud, this guy's going to be a star, he's a first-round pick, blah, 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 and they attached identity to him. And so if you criticize him, he's one of those guys where people freak out about, and they go, oh, imagine! And I can tell you who the people are that freak out. They have Toronto Maple Leafs players in their Twitter avatars. They do. They have a they have Austin Matthews as their Twitter banner mm-hmm. or as their Twitter profile pic, and their name is like, you know, Marner 87, like something like that. That is who loves it. It's like you're 25 years old and under, and you think that Liljegren is God's gift to Earth. The problem is that, no, you're right. Look at the fourth and fifth goals that happened in that Leafs-St. Louis game, right? What happens? He's just out-muscled. He's just not aware around his own net. And that,
the Kyrou one's a penalty, but it's also just a great embodiment of him not being able to hang on there.
It's just, it's not what you're going to need come playoff time, is what Liljegren brings you. And I actually think if we're talking about real trade chips that might net you something back, he's actually the one you have to make a decision on. He's the one you have mm-hmm. to go, well, you know what? He'll have value around the league. He is a reclamation, not a reclamation project, but like, well, I think Blake calls them redraft candidates in his mm-hmm. basketball pieces. He's somebody where you can sell the pedigree, you can sell the upside, you can sell the fact that this guy has taken a meaningful step forward, that he might even be able to be a top four defenseman for some team right now, or especially if you're a team that's trying to rebuild a little bit on the fly or reboot a little bit on the fly, you could end up getting an asset. Like, I have more faith in Liljegren becoming a something than Dermott, right? That he could end up being a bites the Leafs in the ass down the line piece. But in terms of the immediate you should move guys or your best trade pieces to get your team immediately better, I think he's actually the guy that I circle.
It's actually funny that, you know, it sounds like people just won't accept the idea that you could trade someone, have them go on to a good career, and also have been right for trading them when you did. It's like that's not allowed to be a thing. But this is the situation the Leafs are in, because I agree. You know, if a team that's desperately trying to turn around were to take a chance on Liljegren, I think there's a more than 50% chance they get a guy that can play, you know, 17 minutes a night for them, which is good. That's a valuable piece to get. So, yeah, you're right. Good trade chip there. But, you know, the Leafs, unfortunately, the fit's not there. And they don't have time to wait for him to come around, get better, get stronger, become a veteran. It's just not where this team is at in their sort of aging progression, unfortunately.
So we're going to let you go because school's starting. The kids are wriggling around in there. But we do appreciate you making time for us this morning. That's
listen, she's not wrong. I got a wriggly kid. She's not wrong.
Yeah, I can
use playing night crawlers over there, Katie.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate the cutting it short for me. Thanks.
Yeah. Good luck today. Justin Bourne, co-host of Real Kipper and Bourne, and dad of the year today, making the kids get to school virtual, making the snowstorm, probably shoveling the driveway, all that happening.
Well, this is the thing. Anyone can parent a couple kids, but to parent a couple wriggly kids?
Yo, wriggly is a real adjective. You know exactly what they look like when I say wriggly.
Yeah. I'm thinking about, one, the parents who are putting this on in the background right now as they're trying to get their kids settled or whatever, and they've got them in the car. I don't know who you're in the car today in the snowstorm. I don't know. I don't know who's out there.
School's canceled.
But people still go to work. True. But that's the other person is, or they go on a trip. They do a family day. They do something to get the kids out of the house. Maybe they're in the car right now listening to this, or they're at home. What I like to imagine is the parent that's listening to this right now who has completely put the wriggly kids on the other parent. They're like, I have to work. But they're listening to this show right now secretly with their headphones in. You know, that's you. The person who got out and jumped in the car and, I'll go get it. I'll go to the store. We need more milk. And they're listening to this right now. You know, bless you, sneaky parent who is still listening to the show, who still found time to do it. So where are you guys at with what I was saying about Liljegren as a trade chip? Because I honestly believe that ideally you find a way to get out from Muzzin's contract right now, and you find even a sort of a lateral move that gives you a little bit of salary cap space where you can go out and add something else ahead of potentially an off season where it takes an asset for you to get off of Muzzin's money, right? Like, you're doing some work for the now and for the future. I don't think the Leafs would ever do it because, one, it's really hard to make a trade like that. Two is, Bourne's right. Are you really going to find a defenseman that gives you more than Jake Muzzin? No. And three is that in an all-in season where you're trying to win a Stanley Cup, moving a veteran like Jake Muzzin at the deadline, it's hard to envision them bringing in anybody other than, like, Chris Pronger in his prime where the team says, oh, we feel much better about this trade, and this hasn't derailed the momentum of the group or changed the complexion of the room. So I don't think he's moving. But you have to – like, something has to change with this blue line at some point. I believe anyways. I don't think Dermott has any value. I don't think that Hall has any value. Liljegren is the only guy to me that could potentially bring you something back of consequence, but obviously he's the guy that you would like to lose the least out of that group.
Just a question. We've had somebody text in quite a few times in capital letters that you can't trade Jake Muzzin because he has a no-move clause, and is very adamant in the text that we cannot trade Jake Muzzin because he has a no-move clause, which I did not look at until I opened Cap Friendly. So that's something to consider.
Yep.
Didn't know that.
I mean, the player can always waive that, but yeah, he until 2023 when it becomes a 10-team
list. Changes things.
Yeah. But also, I just think, like, even if you could, even if Muzzin said, hey, I'm open to it or whatever, this is an off-season move. You can't. And the third point you made there, JD, is the big one, is in an all-in year, you can't really worry about, oh, well, the next 2 years of Muzzin's deal, unless you're getting someone who is a clear upgrade, which you're just not going to get on the trade market at this time of year.
Yeah. So where are you guys at with Liljegren?
Yeah, no, I think that it's a tough one because he's young and I still think he has upside and he's been in the Leafs program for a while. And that's why people are really hot on him, is because they're like, they've taken a liking to him and his progression. He got his first goal and everyone was like, yes, Liljegren. But I do think that he is one of the most attractive trade pieces because of those things too. He's young. He's got a lot of opportunity to get into a new environment. And as Bourne was saying, maybe he is a good defenseman. Maybe he's a good NHL defenseman, but you know, there is something to say about the fit. So sometimes you need to think, like, is he the right person? And I think Bourne hit it on the head there with, like, yeah, we're not saying that he's not going to be something, but he might not be something with the way that this decor is made up for the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I see the dilemma. I see the upside of keeping him. I see the upside of trading him. And I think it just comes down to what other available pieces there are when this is actually something that can come into fruition.
Yeah, the big thing's going to be, you know, if you dangle him as a piece, you know, it's almost has to be as something bigger, because right now he's as close to a minimum contract, the seventh defenseman, as you're going to get. So I think where I'm at with it is, if you are comfortable locking in, hey, Sandin Liljegren is going to be the third pair because we don't have a lot of options and we're going to play them sheltered minutes. And like our earlier discussions about, hey, maybe you try Sandin up the lineup a little bit more to see if he can handle that. Like, I think the Sandin Liljegren pair in sheltered minutes has shown you enough to be a third pair. It just takes away your ability to experiment with that a little bit more. So you kind of have to accept that as a concession.
So there's an interesting thing that is keeps being floated around about Klingberg, who really wants out of the Stars. Now, I know that it's he's expensive. He probably wants a long-term extension, but people are starting to put together the puzzle pieces that he might be a good void to fill the void on the left of Jake Muzzin. So, you know, I don't know if that's even a feasible thing. It's something we can consider in the next coming weeks. He's pretty much confirmed now that he's looking to get out of it. I mean, he wouldn't be a top pairing D, so it's a little bit less than what he's being asked to do in Dallas. So that is something like a potential piece down the road. There's not many defensemen that are out there like saying that they want out of their current market. I don't know how they'd make the numbers fit. That's not a me thing. That's a Blake thing, but somebody to kind of like ponder in your brain.
Yeah, the question there is, are the Stars willing to eat some of the money? He is a pending free agent, but even fitting 4.25 into the cap sheet the rest of the way, like, you're probably asking the Stars to eat half of that. Maybe they're willing to. I don't really know. You know, that's a question for a Stars person. They're a fringe team right now. Like, they're sixth in the division, but they're a shade over 500. So maybe they think they need to get a player back who can help. But yeah, I mean, on paper, he's the type of defenseman you'd look at, a right shot defenseman, expiring contract, all that stuff. It's just it's a tough one.
Okay, so, but this is actually the type of trade I'm talking about here. This is the type of trade that I think the Leafs need to make, where they're trading multiple assets to get a player of impact where the other team also eats some salary. So I don't know if this is necessarily the perfect fit for them. Here's the deal, though. They need to actually make an upgrade. The question is, how much are you willing to pay for that upgrade? Blake, I don't disagree that the Liljegren-Sandin pairing is good and that you can find sheltered minutes and blah, 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 blah. It's just it's not a playoff look to have two guys like that, where like you can't give them a defensive zone like face-off. They are completely offensive zone oriented, and that's just a tough proposition for me. So yeah, do you want to sacrifice Liljegren so you can bring in some I hate that I'm referencing this player, but it's just where my brain goes in terms of what Leafs have had in the past, like a Roman Polak. No, you're not doing a trade like that. You're using him in a trade like Klingberg, where you're saying, okay, Dallas Stars, what we're willing to do here is we're going to be willing to give you, and I don't know what's an overpay or what's not, but we're going to be willing to give you draft pick capital, a player like Liljegren, who you don't have to dream on. You don't have to hit a draft pick on this, but you're going to get an actual piece, and you're going to get a draft pick, but you got to eat a bunch of salary for this player for the remaining of a year, or you got to take on some type of a lower-end salary off this Leafs roster. The problem with that is I don't know what that piece is that you're taking off the Leafs' hands that's making a real difference. Now that they got Richie through waivers, it's really not a big deal. You're not moving off of the Kerfoot money unless you're getting an upgrade in terms of your top six. And again, that's a I don't think you're doing it move. What, you're going to move Pierre Engvall? No. He's actually proven that he's worth his contract, right? Like, there's no forward, there's no piece right now that is making too much money. And even if you bring in the Justin Hall thing, right, where you go, okay, well, they're going to take Justin Hall. Now your depth is hurt, and now you need another defenseman, and you need somebody at a minimum who's better than Hall. Like, there's just not a piece that really works. The only piece, really, is Mrazek, but... I don't know how you facilitate that at this point.
You can't have Hutchinson as your backup. Like, you can't.
Right. Well, you just can't. Disrespecting our boy or, Joe Wall like that. You
oh,
know,
yeah, Joe Wall, yeah. I mean, the well, two of them are not your backup option for the playoffs.
Right. It gets back to replacement-level player. It's just it's a very, very difficult puzzle for Dubas to put together if he is going to make some changes.
And you could have
and
said...
It's why
Sorry, like Andrei Mikheyev at the beginning of the season, he wanted to play for his contract. He won, and he has. He's earned it. Don't get rid of him. He's like, you know, he's a UFA at the, like, no way are you moving him now the way he's been playing. So even that, like, he could have been a piece. I don't think he's a piece now unless you're willing to get rid of someone that's cheap and good.
Yeah, it is funny because, listen, and Dubas still deserves a lot of credit for this offseason. Getting Kasha, great. Getting Bunting on that deal, great. Kampf, great. But now, as we're getting closer to this thing, it really is hard to ignore how big the mistakes were of Richie and Mrazek, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you kind of had to do the Mrazek, but Mrazek's an injury-prone player. You gave him 3 years at that kind of money. It seems panicky now. Both the Richie and the Mrazek signings seem panicky. And when you're looking at things on balance, it's a bit tough given where they're at right now in terms of the flexibility of the roster. And yes, just the ability to make a change in any significant way, it's very, very, very hard to see. And so, yeah, if you're someone who says the Stan Pat strategy is the way to go because you don't want to give up Liljegren, you don't think that it's good to move an asset that could be cheap and friendly to you for the next couple of years, I get that. I think that that's a fine thing to take. But I guess it depends on how all in you think the Leafs are this year. I think that they're pretty all in yet again. We've gone over how many of their contracts are so friendly to them as well right now.
This
I know
is
they'll
it.
Keep
this
rolling
is the
over
time.
Spezza,
yeah.
but Jack Campbell is going to make way more money next year. You're not going to be able to keep Kasha. You're not going to be able to keep Mikheyev, not on those dollar figures. You got one more year of Bunting on this before that dude's going to want to get paid. The hometown discount is great for now. It's not coming a couple of years from now. So what are you going to do? Where is going to be your move? I feel as though you kind of have to be a little bit desperate. You have to have machinations of moving the Liljegren types. I don't want to move Sandin because I genuinely believe he can be a superstar in the league. And I can't do it. I cannot foresee a trade that makes sense where you end up moving off that player. But Liljegren seems to have a little bit of stock. Maybe we're even putting too much into it. But yeah, if you're piecing him with another asset, maybe a second asset, I don't think that that's outside the realm of discussion right now. Let's take a break and let's bring in our buddy Ross Tucker and wrap up the weekend that was in the NFL and set up the game that he is calling tonight between the Cardinals and the Rams. It's the Fan Morning Show. Ailish Forfar, J.D. Bunkus, Blake Murphy, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ailish Forfar, J.D. Bunkus, Blake Murphy. Living in a snow globe here in Toronto. What a weekend we have to cover with Ross Tucker, former NFL offensive lineman, host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast and RossTucker.com, and calling tonight's Cardinal-Ram game on Westwood One. You've been all over the place the last couple of days. How are you hanging in there?
Easy boy.
Yeah, you know what? I'm hanging in pretty good. It was awesome to be up in Buffalo Saturday night. That atmosphere was just electric. I've actually been texting with some folks I know that are longtime Bills fans and just asking where it ranked, and they're talking about like games from 91, and but they said in terms of the atmosphere, it's hard to explain. It was just like it felt like those people were able to release literally decades of frustration of not having a home playoff game, of, you know, being the Patriots' little whipping boy. And I know they had two home playoff games last year, but it wasn't against the Patriots, and they were only allowed to have 6,500 people there, whereas this place was absolutely jam-packed. I think I tweeted at Ross Tucker NFL, you know, it was 40-10 with 12 minutes left, and it was -8 wind chill, and not a single person left. I mean, I was floored because all I was thinking is, I would be out of here because the traffic is rough leaving. Like, I hate traffic. So, but you know what? For them, they, like, people were tweeting me back saying, like, I'd still be there if I could be. Like, they just wanted to soak in every second of it, which I can fully appreciate it. And then I drove halfway back that night to Pennsylvania. The other half yesterday morning was able to do the Eagles pregame show. And then drove to the Philadelphia airport, and thankfully it was snowing in Philadelphia, but the plane was able to take off, and I got here to Los Angeles and woke up a half hour ago, and good morning from Los Angeles, where it's not snowing at all. It's like 70 degrees and nice. You know, I really, like next week I'm doing the Bucks game. I totally get it why people move south or to California. Like, I get it.
Oh, you get that nice weather is nice? you put that together? You're like, wow, I really noticed how it feels better when it's warm outside than when it's cold outside. That's amazing. So, that Bills atmosphere, by the way, there's no more you were a player, not a fan answer than I would have tried to beat the traffic rather than enjoy one of the biggest playoff wins, beating Bill Belichick into submission, making his team quit in front of him. So, I do want to follow up a little bit more on this Bills game with you just because you were there, the atmosphere, all those things. But, okay, I don't want me to get hot takey with this. Belichick's legacy is his legacy, right? Like, that matters. He's the greatest coach probably of all time. I'm sure some people have a different answer, but to me, he will always be that, regardless of what happens here in the future. But do you think his team quit on him? And if they did, what does that mean for his future with the organization long term?
Yeah, I don't know if I would say that they quit on him. Two things jump out to me. One is they just looked so old and slow on both sides of the ball. And I think that that is a little bit exasperated when it is as cold as it was. I think, you know, look, I can tell you, I'm 42 now. When I was a player, I'd go out there with a T-shirt and shorts. Now, I weighed like 320 pounds, but I'd go out there with a T-shirt and shorts, and it wouldn't bother me at all. Now, like, the older you get, the more the cold weather bothers you. And I just, their guys, Kyle Van Noy and, you know, Dante Hightower, some of the guys that have been really good players for them for a decade, they were just sticking the blocks like glue. I mean, they need to really revamp that defense. Even Devin McCourty, you know, started to look old to me. So I don't think they quit on him. I think that, you know, you noticed a clear difference in the team speed for both of them. And I don't think, you know, they quit on him and that's the knock on Belichick, but the Bills pitched the first ever perfect game. I mean, no turnovers, no punts. They scored a touchdown every time they had a ball. They either scored a touchdown or took a knee every time they had a ball, the entire game. And I think on some level, I'm not going to get hot takey either, but it's not a good reflection on Belichick. I mean, there's been one perfect game pitched, and you were the one that couldn't get a hit. You couldn't get anything. You couldn't even get a walk. I mean, they couldn't do anything, you know. And I know he's still basically the defensive coordinator. I mean, his son does a lot. Gerard Mayo does a lot. But his name's on it, and I just think that was a really bad look. And even more importantly, I thought some of these teams this weekend, the playoff game, took a little bit of the shine off of their surprising season. I'll put the Eagles in that category as well. Okay. You know, I think the Patriots, Eagles making the playoffs, you know, that's great. Hey, people maybe didn't expect it, and they exceed expectations. But when you're that non-competitive, it leaves a bad taste in the fan base's mouth moving forward about, you know, really, how good were you really, and how far away are you really?
So you said you didn't want to get hot takey. I got a little hot takey yesterday during the Eagles game, and thankfully I saw a tweet from you that validated my hot take that was only going internally in my head. The decision for the Eagles to not go away from Hurts there and try something different with Minshew, I know you tweeted as much. I don't know how serious that was, but what was your take on how that game played out for the Eagles and Jalen Hurts? And, you know, should they have gone to Minshew at some point because the ball just wasn't moving? Not that Minshew's better than Jalen Hurts or they should attach to him, but that was about one game.
Yeah, no, I don't think they should have gone to Minshew. I do think they needed Jalen Hurts to try to work through that. And I sort of reject, you know, and this happens in other cities, I know, but it's especially prevalent in Philadelphia, where I'm from. It's such a roller coaster of emotions and opinions based on the latest result. And you just can't operate businesses that way. I mean, all of the people that yesterday at 12:45 were saying Jalen Hurts has shown he is the guy for next year. He's a franchise quarterback. We believe in him. The Eagles are going to win the game. I mean, there, you know, the pregame show I was on, multiple, I don't know if you call them experts, but they're on the show, said that they thought the Eagles were going to win the game. I was like, really? I mean, say it out loud. Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni go on the road to beat Tom Brady, the defending Super Bowl champion Bucks. I don't think so, guys. Like, that'd be awesome. I get another paycheck for a pregame show, but like, I don't think it's going to happen. But then there's some of the same people who are now saying, boy, the Eagles need to explore their options. You know, the Eagles need to trade for someone. It's just, I reject that one bad game for Jalen Hurts is cause for this much of a change of opinion. You know, he's had a pretty big body of work. He had a bad game. He is far from the first young quarterback to have a bad outing in their first playoff start. It doesn't really change that much for me. He didn't play very well, but quite frankly, nobody really played all that well for the Eagles.
Yeah. There were just some moments in that game too that I thought either the Kelce holding call that really seemed to sort of change the domino effects of that game, the way that obviously the drop punt, there was just a few things where I go, the Eagles just sucked. They just looked like a team that was overwhelmed. I didn't really think it was a quarterback. The interception that he threw. Yeah.
Yeah. How about the Goddard drop when there was nobody around him? I mean, how about on the first drive for the Bucks, the Barnett roughing the passer on Brady? I mean, it could have been a more competitive game, but it was still 31-0. I mean, you know, you can complain about the refs, and they had a couple bad calls, but, you know, I always feel like the closer the game, the better argument you have when you're complaining about the refs. When it's 31-0, you can't be like, yeah, but that one call in the first quarter, like, come on, dude, play better.
I guess where I was going with it is more, I just viewed that Eagles team overall as overwhelmed, not as just like a Jalen Hurts was overwhelmed, and if they had a different quarterback, things would have been better. I do wonder, though, let's stick with the NFC East here, because that was one of the themes of the weekend was, wow, did we maybe really overrate this division? Did we really have perceptions change? So it doesn't seem like your mind changed much on Hurts or the Eagles. You said the body of work, and that's a strong case. How does that apply when you think about the Cowboys?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm the right person to talk to. I picked them to lose the game. I thought the 49ers would win the game. I love the 49ers with the points on the Even Money podcast. I you know, that's the betting podcast I do. I took the Niners. I just thought the Niners were the better team. The Cowboys, and I do think a decent amount of it is coaching. It's like time is – the Dallas Cowboys are a flat circle. Every year it feels like they've got a lot of really good players, and yet they just can't put it all together when they need to. But the amount of penalties, and I'm very disappointed to see Mike McCarthy and Dak Prescott after the game complaining about the penalties. You know, we can go back and look at them, but almost all of them, they did. It was clear. I mean, the defensive holdings by Gregory Odighizuwa, they were blatant. You know, the illegal hand to the face by Gallimore, blatant. You know, obviously the false start penalties, you know, the pre-snap penalties, no one could argue. I mean, I don't even know if I remember any penalties that weren't legit. So I'm very disappointed. I really like personal responsibility, personal accountability, and it felt like McCarthy and Dak Prescott were both kind of trying to pass the buck when those were the two biggest culprits in the Cowboys losing the game. You know, Dak didn't play very well, missed a bunch of throws, you know, played better at the end, but it was too little too late. And McCarthy, you know, I mean, he's in charge of game management and setting the culture for the team as the head coach. And the culture is one of a lack of discipline, the most penalties in the NFL. And his game management decisions are typically terrible, although it actually almost worked out for him in this regard. So, no, I thought the Niners would win the game, and they did, and they deserve to.
So if we look ahead to tonight's matchup, you're calling it on Westwood One. What are you thinking for the Cardinals to have a script to maybe make that upset tonight? You know, it was one of the more popular of the underdog picks of the weekend. Are you feeling the same way? And if so, how does it get done?
Yeah, I think it'll be a close game. I lean to the Rams, although them being down both their starting safeties, that feels problematic to me. You know, most NFL teams, you lose one guy at a position, your next guy in is usually pretty good. Like, he's good enough, right? Your third corner, your third safety, your sixth offensive lineman. When you get cluster injuries like the Rams have, Taylor Rapp is out with a concussion. Jordan Fuller has to have surgery on his ankle. Now you're calling like Eric Weddle, who's been retired for 2 years. He's 37 years old. I mean, desperate times call for desperate measures. I don't think that bodes real well for the Rams. I'm very curious to see the composition of the crowd tonight. But I still think the Rams will win, but I do believe it's a close one. Let's hope it is. I was disappointed that three of the five games so far were basically non-competitive. As a broadcaster and as just a fan, I root for close games. So I think the recipe for the Cardinals is twofold, and it's number one, Kyler Murray's legs. I just think Kyler Murray, you know, he might be the fastest quarterback I've ever seen, certainly the quickest. He just has to utilize that a lot tonight and be a major factor with that unique weapon that a lot of guys don't have. Nobody else has to his extent. And then the Matthew Stafford turnover thing. I mean, he's had at least two each of the last three games. Whether it's J.J. Watt or Chandler Jones or whoever, they got to get after Stafford, force him into some bad decisions. Feels like he makes two to three bad throws a game, and they need to cash in when he does that.
Looking forward to the game, Ross. Looking forward to your call on Westwood One. Looking forward to checking out that Even Money podcast and see if there's a Stafford INT prop or something there. Ross Tucker, Ross Tucker Football Podcast, RossTucker.com. Got the game tonight. Thanks so much for making the time, man.
Yeah, no, thanks you guys for moving it. They would have 4:45 would have been rough, so thank you.
Hey, we're up at 4:45 every morning.
I know.
Just teasing. Good luck.
Thanks, Ross.
See you, Ross.
Ross Tucker.
So
former NFL O-lineman, Ross Tucker Football Podcast, rosstucker.com. Rams cards tonight. I don't know. It's spicy. I'm getting fired up.
I need to say something to both of you, though, and it ties into that Niners game that we talked about, where Ailish and I were right and Blake was wrong about the Niners versus the Cowboys, that game. I don't think Cooper Kupp is the most dynamic receiver in football. We've talked about this earlier in the show. You guys referenced it. Yeah. I just couldn't help but – I'm watching – this hurts me. This hurts me deep in my soul as a Seahawks fan who cannot stand the Niners. I adore watching Deebo Samuel play football. It is a joy. It is the light of my life right now. This guy, that touchdown he had where he's going to the sideline, he has the wherewithal to just cut it back and then accelerate and power through. When the jet sweeps they run with him, the way he's not afraid of physical football, that he could have that type of an impact on a game where Jimmy G, the Niners just say, hey, we don't want Jimmy throwing the football this game, okay? We want Jimmy throwing it as little as possible, because every once in a while Jimmy throws one of those balls, but it was the interception that almost changed the game, right, where it's a short throw and he overthrows his receiver by 5 feet and it ends up in the breadbasket of a Cowboys player. They said clearly, Kyle Shanahan said clearly, we think that Cowboys team is soft. We're going to run it down their throats all game long. And they did it. Elijah Mitchell is super. I can't tell if he's underrated or overrated, because the Niners do that with every single guy.
Yeah.
You know, like the Niners take bums off the streets.
You can't get too excited about Niners. No.
Right. Like Elijah Mitchell is the guy that another team signs 2 years from now, right? They give a contract to the Jacksonville Jaguars, go, we've signed Elijah Mitchell, who averages 110 yards a game. And then all of a sudden he starts to average 43 yards per game. I just don't think he's a star, but he is good. But Deebo just has a pop to him, an awareness to him, a physicality to him as a receiver running back. I almost hate it now when they throw up the stats of first receiver to score a rushing touchdown. I go, he's not that, though. He's more. He's clearly more. And if you want to talk about props where you can find value right now, it was one of them that I tweeted out yesterday, but Debo's rushing props are laughably low. It's the Pascal Siakam assist thing where Vegas says, well, this guy shouldn't be getting a bunch of assists or rushing yards because he's not a running back or he's not a point guard. But it's just watch the games. He's going to get those rush yards for you. This is basically my favorite bet of the week. Maybe it's because he's made me money on that rushing prop week after week after week, but I adore watching Deebo Samuel play football. He's my favorite player in the league. And if I could take one receiver, he's the guy I would take.
Yeah, Debo's the ultimate, like, I don't know if they still do this, but, like, the NFL draft where guys used to just be listed as, like, ATH, like, athlete. Like, they don't have a position. Yeah. Get him to the NFL and figure it out. We don't know what Devin Hester's going to do. We don't know what Brian Agnew's going to do. Just get him to the NFL and figure it out. And Deebo is he threw a touchdown in the last game of the season, too, just for just for a little extra spice. He's awesome, man. He's so much fun to watch. And you get him and Kupp in your division, and then you see what Russ is throwing to. It's got to sting a little more than a little.
This is something I actually don't know for certain either. Is his real name Deebo? Like, DeMar DeRozan's nickname is Deebo because of the movie Friday, where the bully is Deebo, and it's so Deebo
his name is
coming.
Tyshawn Deebo Samuel Sr.
Okay, so but Deebo isn't his name.
Well, that's in quotes as in his nickname. Sorry, so it's.
Oh, no, okay, so no, because I was going to say, like, that's incredible if he's the first actually, like, some parent went, you know what, we're naming our kid Deebo, we're going full bore with it. I assumed it was a nickname, because it is a popular nickname, right, because of the movie Friday, but I just thought he was the first guy where I've never heard any other name with it, right? I've just only heard Deebo Samuel, and so no, that's okay. So I just needed to clarify that, because I thought maybe he was the first Deebo, because it's a long enough time where now parents of who were fans of that movie would have had a kid who's in the NFL named Deebo. You know what I mean? Like, we're there. So I would have loved it anyway. I'm disappointed either way. It would have been really good. He's totally taken it from DeMar DeRozan. DeRozan is no longer Deebo then. This is the only Deebo, right? Deebo power rankings, Deebo Samuel number one by far.
Yeah, but DeMar's still got if DeMar wants that nickname back, you've heard Vince Staples talk about DeMar, right? If DeMar wants that nickname back, he's going to take it back.
Yeah. Don't test DeMar DeRozan.
Respect DeMar DeRozan.
Respect DeMar DeRozan. So yeah, I think we feel that way about that game tonight. I feel like I wonder, before we go, what's the team that you feel worse about with the loss? Because I've said it. I don't think it's the Eagles. To me, the Eagles, you stunk. Your season was not supposed to be a year where you were there anyways. You got more information. I'm not down on Jalen Hurts. It's the Cowboys, right? Like, the Cowboys have – their fan base, their team has to be smarting after this one.
Like, did you see those the viral – God, it's just like Cowboys fans have had it bad. They're down bad. Everyone's saying they're the Maple Leafs of the NFL, and then you see all those screen grabs from people crying during the game, and like that, you feel for them a bit. Oh, I mean,
that one girl was
bawling her eyes out in like the third quarter, and I'm like, girl, like,
I thought something else happened to her. Like, my conspiracy there is that her boyfriend and her just got in a huge fight because he was in a bad mood, and she was like, why are you always like this? And she cried, and they caught her at a wrong time. Yeah, there's no way she thought the game was over, right? Come on, that's just a tough one.
She just was emotional about it all.
I think she was. If you're the Cowboys, it's that, right? Like, you checked off every box. You had a running game, you had a defense, you had the analytics stuff, and it didn't work out, and you have very little cap flexibility moving forward, and it's a tough day to be a Cowboys fan, I think. This really felt like a year you needed to have these pieces come together and coalesce. But
there's always next year.
Cowboys fans. Cowboys fans is just, it's open season. They're the number one fan base that you can make fun of with impunity. Just like Leafs, right? And I don't feel bad because I'm a member of one of these communities, right? Like, where, hey, you can take any shot you want at a Leaf fan. Nothing's too low. Cowboys fans are the same way. And so I'm taking my shots when I get them because the Leafs don't play in the playoffs for a while, and they're probably going to have the same thing happen to them. So I'm going to get this in while I can. Go, Leafs, go. Cowboys fans, losers again. Well, amazing.
This is that graphic. What are you going to do? Stab me? Said stabbing victim.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. One more tonight. Rams.
Subscribe to the
Rams
pod.
Cards. Yeah. And then we got the. Then we got our second week set. Raps Heat 7:30 on Sportsnet tonight. Subscribe to the podcast. Get your waking rakes in. We'll talk to you tomorrow. It's Fan Morning Show. Sports at 590 The Fan.